Hi, my name is Mandy Jackson Beverly. Welcome to the Bookshop Podcast. Each week, I present interviews with independent bookshop owners from around the globe, authors, publishing professionals, and specialists in subjects dear to my heart, the environment and social justice. To help the show reach more people, please share it with friends and family and on social media. And remember to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. You're listening to episode 237. Mrs. Dalloway's is a vibrant, full-service, independent neighborhood bookstore located in the beautiful historic Elmwood District of Berkeley, California. The store was founded in 2004 when longtime friends and residents of the Elmwood, Marion Abbott and Anne Leahy, decided to pool their passions, talents, and resources. In 2021, Marion and Anne decided the time had come to retire and put the store up for sale. They chose Eric and Jessica Green as the best equipped to carry on the store's legacy, and the couple took ownership on November 10th, 2021. With longtime publisher sales and retail buying and merchandising experience, Eric and Jessica have carried on the Mrs. Dalloway's traditions and maintained the store's attractive look and feel. Spacious and inviting, Mrs. Dalloway's offers an exciting and diverse selection of titles, both comprehensive and contemporary, and is renowned for its skillfully curated fiction, non-fiction, poetry, garden book, and children's book sections, all of which feature a remarkable and relevant variety of rare and innovative small presses. The store also carries a variety of hand-selected merchandise geared to lifestyle, literature, and gardening, a revolving art exhibition, and fresh plants. Hi, Jessica and Eric, and welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise to get the email to do this. And yeah. So we're excited.
Well, I'm excited to learn all about you both and the store. So let's begin with learning about you both and how you became independent bookshop owners.
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead and start. So I had worked in the book industry on the sales side, working with publishers, selling books to accounts for a long time, 28 years, and then got laid off in April of 2020 and had the luxury of a nice severance. And so spent about a year and a half during that time frame, not having to worry about work at all or having to look for work, which was a pretty amazing opportunity. And then in early 21, needed to start to try and find a job for the first time in decades. And so that was honestly kind of frightening. And so, you know, started that process kind of for real for only just about a couple weeks. And then, you know, people always ask, was it your dream to own a bookstore? And I put it, you know, it was not a dream of ours, but it was something that because of my involvement in the industry and, you know, both of us being big readers forever, it was something we talked about here and there over our life together. Right. And just never really had the chance to like really think about it, making it happen as reality. So in April of 21, I Googled, as I do every once in a while, bookstores for sale in the United States. And there's always a handful that pop up. And one of them was Back of Beyond in Moab, Utah, which is an amazing and wonderful bookstore. And the particular draw that made it of interest to us at that moment was my mother lives in Grand Junction, Colorado, which is just a couple hours away. So the opportunity to be much closer to her was really something we gave consideration to for 24 hours, because then truly the next day, there was the press release that the prior owners of Mrs. Dalloway's had put out about putting the store up for sale. Mm-hmm. So we spent 24 hours thinking about a bookstore in Moab, Utah, and then immediately started to work on what it would take to become owners of Mrs. Dalloway's.
Just the idea of being able to, we were at the point in our lives, it was perfect timing. Eric was out of work and looking to not work in a corporate environment.
Yeah, kind of didn't want to go back to what I had been doing.
And I was kind of fine at my job. I loved the people I worked with. I liked my job too, but it was never, you know, like in your soul kind of thing. And like, I felt like now would be a really good time. We're empty nesters. We have two grown daughters that are independent, beautiful women on their own. And it was just a perfect time to make a big change like that. And then to be able to do this and not have to move anywhere. I mean, and the Elmwood, I mean, Mrs. Dalloway's is a presence in this, in Berkeley. And we had frequented that location quite a few times and loved that bookstore. And we're like, are you kidding me? This is an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. So the timing was just right. Really perfect with where we were right at that point in our lives of being able to look at each other and go, wow, we could probably make this happen right now. Mm-hmm. And here we are.
When you speak to other bookstore owners, a lot of times their stories have something like there's one point of their story where the stars are aligning. You know what I mean? There's just something that was telling them it's the right time. And for that was for us. Mm-hmm. It was the right time.
That's a wonderful story. One of the things I've noticed while speaking with independent bookshop owners from around the globe is how many of them decided to open an independent bookshop at the start of the pandemic. But just like you and Mrs. Dalloway's, things aligned and there was no way of stopping what was meant to be. I think moments like that are truly exciting.
Yeah.
Really exciting. Yeah.
Eric, you were telling us a little bit about your background. You were with Ingram, is that right?
So I started working at Publishers Group West, a distributor here in the Bay Area, in 92. Mm-hmm. And so then we're with them and through different iterations as they were bought and as their parent company was bought, et cetera. And in the end, they were a division owned by Ingram. Yeah. So I worked on the Ingram Publishing Services side of their distribution arm.
And for our listeners, Publishers Group West is a great distribution company. It's one you want to look for if you're an author and you're signing with a hybrid publisher, because that means that your books will get good distribution and that they have a good chance of being in independent bookshops.
Yeah, correct. So PGW, as they're known, they were the first independent publisher distribution company that collected a lot of publishers together and gave them the opportunity to have like a full sales force and you know, synergy of working together and doing a lot more with the distributor than they could as independent small or medium publishers. And, you know, since then there's been, you know, a bunch of different ones over the years that now, you know, Ingram ended up buying a few of them and have kept them separate in terms of identity and the publisher mix, and not all the sales reps sell across brands and whatever, but it brought an opportunity for smaller publishers to have more strength in the market just by their accumulation under a larger umbrella, and therefore better for the authors too.
Yeah, and I have a soft spot for small and medium presses. Many are doing brilliant work. One example is Natania Jance, co-owner of Sort of Books in London, along with her partner Mark Ellingham. They edited and published author Shihan Karuna Tilaka's novel, The Seven Moons of Mali Almeida, which ended up winning the 2022 Booker Prize.
Or like Transit with John Fosse. I mean, they're such a small publisher, they were like blown away by what happened there. So
Yeah, I thank them for their courage to take authors in and nurture them. It's great. I have another quick question. Didn't there used to be another wholesaler in the US and now it's just Ingram?
Oh, in terms of just wholesaling, it's really just Ingram. Yeah. So, you know, wholesaling as distinct from distribution is, you know, they just buy the books from the publishers and resell them without, you know, having the full sales representation and marketing. And, you know, Ingram does have actual reps, but it's a different situation. But yeah, in terms of wholesalers, it's just Ingram. There used to be, so Baker & Taylor, who's still around, only servicing, you know, the education market, they used to do general wholesale. There's a place called Gordon's. Bookazine is still in the Northeast, but they like really just have a regional focus. So there used to be quite a lot more over the years. And yeah, now it's just Ingram.
Well, thanks for that information. Jessica, I'd love to know more about your background in merchandising and brand management and how that reflects on the gifts that you sell in the store.
Yeah. It was a little scary to go into a bookstore because I don't know, like, other than through osmosis and being married to a man in the book industry, I don't know much about running a bookstore. But I worked for a prominent home furnishings and decor company, chain.
You can name them.
Can I name them?
Sure, why not?
Cost Plus World Market for a long time. And in that position, I was a buyer. I was able to build assortments from concept to the market, go traveling. I learned so much about sourcing and creating an assortment and focusing it in on your customer set and that kind of thing, that it was a real attribute to bring to the bookstore. Books have a low margin, and a lot of bookstores have, this is why bookstores have gifts and what we call sidelines. And in our store, it's a small segment, but it's, you can make a better margin with the gifts. I focus in my skills on bringing in gifts that are, you know, Mrs. Dalloway's has a high quality, eco-friendly kind of vibe and a garden theme. So we have this, a lot of garden themed gifts, and it's really fun to find new vendors, source what we think will work with our customers. I try new things and sometimes they don't always work, but it's live and learn. And the customers just, it's such a thrill when they bring something to the counter to buy it and they make comment, like positive comments about, this is perfect for my mother or whatever. It's really fun.
What you just said segues beautifully into my next question, because you talk a lot about being true to your values. And that is one of the things that drew you to purchasing Mrs. Dalloway's. But I'd love to know how you're working to increase this aspect of the bookshop.
Well, I was telling Eric the other day, we were talking about how all along in my career, you know, climbing the corporate ladder, et cetera, in different jobs, I've learned so much and like had some amazing opportunities and worked with amazing people, but I never felt like it was part of me, like living with intent. You know what I mean? Like I'm getting stuff into stores and selling them, but bringing home a paycheck and helping support the family. Mrs. Dalloway's has this really engaging feel for the community. I feel like it's a gathering place for the community. They're looking for nice quality, beautiful products and books. And I wanted to make it a one-stop shop, like especially at the holidays, they could come in and, you know, get something for everybody in their family, either a book or a gift or a combination. And sometimes they tie together, you know, a garden book and some seed collection, little tchotchkes. I feel like our values, you can feel them in the store. You walk in, it's engaging, it's airy, and we want people to have the experience.
Is there a scent to the store?
Is there a scent? People say I love the scent of the store. Yeah, but like I don't know what they're smelling. We have lovely soaps.
Yes. Yeah. In that area of the store, it's probably some of the soap for sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
It doesn't smell like
we're so used to
musty. It doesn't smell like a musty library.
Yeah, it doesn't smell like a used bookstore now. Which is a great smell, don't get me wrong, but
Yes, it's a wonderful smell. Although sometimes it tends to bring on a bout of sneezing.
Right, exactly.
What about you, Eric? How does Mrs. Dalloway's keep you in tune with being true to your values?
You know, I'm thrilled to be in the independent bookstore side of things for the sake of just, you know, literacy and spreading of knowledge and, you know, just the opportunity to make information available to people that want it, you know, in a place that is safe and open and a gathering spot for people, you know, in the community, the ones that we see every day or every other day, or the ones, you know, people that are there for the first time and have never been there before and are enjoying themselves so much that they want to tell you that. They're like, oh, this is my first time in the store. I just love it so much. It's got such a great feel to it, you know, and it's like, that just warms my heart. And, you know, we have to, of course, give tribute to Ann Leahy and Marian Abbott, the prior owners, because we haven't changed the store very much at all. You know, if you were there a bunch of years ago and you came in today, it's going to be recognizable. And so, you know, it was their vision that was such a wonderful vision that, you know, we love the store as is. And, you know, it'll probably change slowly over years, but not in any, you know, not like we want to make big changes because it's so nice and people love it as is. So keep that going.
They're amazing women. Anyways, they're our mentors. We still have dinner with them every month or so.
Yeah, a couple months or so. They live in the neighborhood. Yeah, but they are in the store regularly, so it's great to see them on a friendly basis instead of, you know, like moving from the business transaction relationship to actually like being friends and getting to know them more.
Yeah, life is about building relationships. That's the way I look at it. Earlier, I was explaining to you how my time at the Elmwood area was when I was doing the old college visits with my sons. And I remember wandering down College Avenue and just thinking about what a vibrant area it is. And of course, it features small businesses with these beautiful, colorful awnings. Now, with UC Berkeley close by, would you say the Elmwood is a tourist destination? And do you feel supported by your local community?
I would say majority is the local community. Mrs. Dalloway's is in their heart, and they let us know that.
Like day one.
They were like, do not mess this up. We love this place. And we're like, we're in here. We're here for the long haul. But we do see certain times of year, the parents of the students come through town. Some people stay at the Claremont Hotel, which is just walking distance away, or tourists are from out of town. So there's a segment that definitely are out of towners. Mm-hmm. And then also like the greater Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, we get a lot of customers from just all over the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And we're so lucky to have local authors. We have a ton of local authors in our area. And then them, their friends, you know, and just the whole writing
that's
community.
Fun when they just drop in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, look for their book. And they're always, you know, it's fun when they're surprised to be able to find, even if it's just one copy or two that we have in the store of their book as they're stopping by. Yeah.
Yeah. The Elmwood population is about 12,000, just in that small regional area.
Yeah, consider the Elmwood district.
Yeah, and we have a lot of regulars.
Yeah, definitely a very, very devoted clientele from the neighborhood. A lot of them have lived there, you know, forever. The space before it was Mrs. Dalloway's, it was closed for a bit of time, but before that it was Avenue Books. So there's been a bookstore in that location even much longer than the almost 20 years Mrs. Dalloway's has been there. And so, you know, there are a lot of them that bring that up. It's like, oh, I've been here since it was Avenue Books. And the depth of their love for the store was a little surprising. You know, it's like we expected it. I mean, every independent bookstore is beloved by its community. And I don't think it's just me when I say that Mrs. Dalloway's, I think, is a little deeper just because of the history and the store prior closed and the neighborhood sort of got together and wanted a store again. When I started working there before true ownership, like right away, every day there was one or more people wanting to introduce themselves, say hi to the new owner. And because I started working there full-time before Jessica, she kept her prior job for about 6 months. So we sort of had a transition. And it was just amazing to start to feel that love for the store on a daily basis, like very genuine in these short conversations with the neighbors.
Yeah. And one of the things I was thinking of the other day, actually, while I was in my own local indie bookshop, Barrett's Books here in Ojai, everyone who came in that bookshop was greeted by the manager, Matt Henriksen, who was on the shop floor at that time. And I couldn't help but notice how the customers' faces lit up, not just by his friendly greeting, but because he took them to the exact place where the books they were looking for were located. I just couldn't help but kind of smile to myself because this is a place where relationships are made, and it made me happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to your booksellers. I would love to hear about them and the genres they enjoy reading.
We have an amazing staff that came with the store. Like, they all decided to stay on after when we bought the store, which we were so lucky because they bring, they're mostly part-time. We have 9 people on staff. 1 is full-time. The rest are part-time. They bring a cumulative just short of 200 years of bookselling experience with these 9 people. Like, it's amazing. A lot of them are retired or, you know, some have a second job. But we have, I'll start with the children's. The children's department, we have an amazing children's specialist. We have 3 children's specialists. They all focus on a certain area, but then they work together to build relationships with schools and have author events at schools, et cetera. Jennifer handles the buying and the, you know, curation of picture books and the young readers. Jennifer's like a librarian at an elementary school as well. So she's the in on what kids are reading now and what they should be reading, et cetera. Anne brings a ton of experience, and she handles a lot of the middle grade buying and guidance to customers. And then they work together on curating the whole department. And Carolyn is our floor manager. She handles the young adult segment. She's the buying and curation. And then they all read just general, especially Carolyn. She reads in the general fiction, and she's able in contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. She's able to give guidance to customers when they come in, just in any segment of the store, which is amazing.
And who does all the buying?
So I do about probably 60% of the front list new buying with publishers, and then certain segments, some of the other staff handles. And the, so Allison, who's one of the longtime staff members, she does the buying for the garden and nature section. And in terms of what she likes to read, she's like literary fiction and narrative nonfiction. Sydney works with the reps for a lot of the university publishers, and also then curates the art section, art design, photography, along with Haida and Jennifer from the children's also has a background in art. So she helps out there too. Sydney also, I'd say probably steers mostly towards literary fiction and some nonfiction too. Yeah.
She likes Russian fiction.
Haida, general nonfiction and narrative, narrative nonfiction and general fiction reader. And then we've got Hutt, who is our mystery expert. Cynthia is our sci-fi and fantasy genre expert. And then, and finally, we have Hannah, who reads everything. And I mean that literally.
Oh, my God.
So she can recommend something for everybody. But, you know, she likes quirky fiction, you know, likes good mystery, good narrative is what draws Hannah in.
Sounds like you've got every genre covered.
We do, thankfully. Yeah.
Yes.
And how many square feet is the bookshop?
2,800.
Yeah, it's 2,800.
About 2,800.
And about 2,500 selling, and then 300 back office. Yeah.
Right.
That's a big space.
You know, to me, it feels like a medium sized store.
Yeah.
You know, just having been into so many bookstores over the years, there's a lot smaller and a lot bigger.
Yeah.
It's you know, you always wish for more, always just wish for more space, but it's a good size for sure.
Okay, space in a bookshop brings me on to my next question. Suppose a self-published author has followed the Independent Book Publishing Association publishing guidelines and publishes widely through Ingram Spark. Would you consider carrying their book if you felt it reader-worthy and complied with the traditional publishing standards? The reason I wanted to ask you both this question is because many self-published authors complain that their local independent bookshop won't carry their book. So my main question that I ask them is, where do you buy your books? Do you buy them from your local independent bookshop? Have you built up a relationship with the booksellers in your bookshop? Do you have wide distribution? I'd love your thoughts on this.
Yeah, sure. No, this is an interesting question on your list of questions. You know, so a lot of my feeling comes from my background of working, you know, trying to sell books. And while a lot of my time at PGW and Ingram was on the special sales side, you know, overseeing the entire special sales department for a bunch of years. Before that, I did work on the trade side and with the field reps that would go into independent bookstores. And so, you know, My answer largely comes from that, but I'll say that I always consider a book when an author gets in touch. You know, prefer it via email. It's just hard to like have conversations in the store, and so I would always caution people just approach email. That's the best way at first, and I always take a look at the book. And so, you know, so the self-published books, I have brought some into the store here and there that are local authors. And what makes me largely decide to do that is up front without any sort of prompting, you know, they'll say something like, you know, I have friends and family that are going to want to buy the book. I'll send them to Mrs. Dalloway's to get it. And so I'll get a copy or two, and sometimes those will sell and I'll maybe reorder another one, and other times they'll sit on the shelf. And so like, from my prior life, what I say is, what are you going to do to drive customers into the store? Mm-hmm. Because that's what a traditional publisher does with publicity and marketing and, you know, all that social media, yada, yada, that makes people come into the store looking for a book. I can't just put something on the shelf and cross my fingers and hope someone happens upon it. I mean, sure, there is some of that that goes on even with traditional publishing and front list buying. But for the most part, I'm going to want the author to actually be upfront with what they're going to do to bring at least a few customers in asking for that book. And sometimes it's worth a try and sometimes it's not. And, you know, as you alluded to in your phrasing of the question, there's only so much space. And, you know, it's a low margin business, and we want books to be picked up off the shelf and brought to the counter. And yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, and I would stress to self-published authors, when you're doing advertising for your books, consider posting a picture of yourself with your book in the independent bookshop that is carrying your book, rather than just putting an Amazon link along with your ad.
Makes all the difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not just blabbing about this. It's something I have experience with because I self-published my three novels and novella. The first one was not ready to go out. It needed another couple of editing runs. By the third and fourth book, I felt confident because I had a great team behind me, which brings me on to another point. Self-publishing to a high standard that equals traditionally published books is expensive and it takes a lot of time.
Yes. And, you know, and it's a business where no one's making a lot of money in book publishing and book sales. You know, sure, there's the top CEOs or whatever, but generally no one in the business is making a lot of money. And the general public doesn't understand the fact that, like, books have pre-printed prices on them. Nothing else in retail is like that. I understand why people want to buy their books at a discount and whatever. You can do that. You know, and just then what Jessica's referring to is like inflation. So having spent years working with small publishers, they never wanted to raise their prices. You know, there's always the fear of like, oh, people aren't going to buy it because I raise it a buck. And there was always these like artificial benchmarks. Like paperback can't go over $19.99. There's no way, you know, and then at a certain point they had to. And it was interesting to see, like, right when we bought the store was when inflation generally was going crazy and going out of sight. And, you know, there's a period of time where our expenses are going up because everything's going up, but publishing took a while to catch up and actually start to raise their prices. It's noticeable now. You know, now you've got like Barbra Streisand at $40, which is huge, and that's expensive. But, you know, I was glad, and I was telling the reps, I'm like, I'm glad your publishers are actually starting to raise the prices. They're catching up with inflation because there was this like 9-month gap where they weren't. So
I remember at the early stages of the pandemic, there was a paper shortage. You know, it was difficult. Shipping and everything stopped for a while. So that also raised the prices, and it was difficult to get certain books. Another issue that comes up is discounting books. If you look at the slice of the publishing pie, you have the author who spent years writing their book. You have the agent, the publisher, and within the publisher, you have the editors. You have the marketing team, the cover designer, the formatter, the sales team, the booksellers and bookshop owners. And if you go discounting books, slashing their prices, the piece of the pie involving everybody who has put together that book that is now in your hands gets smaller and smaller. And the truth is, many authors are lucky if they make a living wage from book sales. They have second and third jobs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm sure most authors don't make a living.
While we're speaking about publishing and pieces of the pie, I was wondering, since taking over Mrs. Dalloway's, do you see ways publishers and distributors could do more to support independent bookshops?
Yeah, I don't really have an answer to that question, even having had a chance to think about it for a while. And definitely my history is skewing my thought process on this. Because I think the only things that I could think of would cost more money. Some point along the line, it would cost the public, like, you know, having more reps to visit the stores, the independent bookstores, because there, you know, there used to be, all the publishers used to have larger field force, and that meant that they could actually go into physically visit for their sales calls more stores than they do now. And a lot of that over years moved to telesales, which is good, They can't afford to hire more reps, but I think that would maybe be the one thing, because having a sales rep for the big publishers that comes into the store and therefore knows the store physically, you know, and is in there like three or four times a year, because there's so many books published and I can only fit so many in the store, having good reps to help you make those choices who know your store. I think that's a huge thing that tends to get forgotten at the corporate accounting level of seeing how much it costs to have a rep out in the field. And, you know, having seen my teammates over the years, like, fight to keep the field reps that visit the bookstores. And it's always a shrinking sales force, you know, it's always a shrinking sales force.
I've been taking classes through the Professional Booksellers School. And the other people taking the, like right now I'm taking inventory management, and a lot of the other people attending are work at bookstores or their owners. It's surprising how many of these smaller bookstores don't have reps visit them. They're like, who is my sales rep? Do I have a sales rep? You know, things like that. And I was like, oh my God, we're so lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of where we are in a, you know, city. And
a certain size
of the store.
I mean, like, you know, it's a billing benchmark whether you get a rep or not.
Yeah,
in cases
it would be really hard to choose what to put in your store.
And I would, the flip side is, you know, I would add Winter Institute is a great opportunity for the stores that don't see reps to be able to meet with at least some of the publishers that are there.
And are you attending Winter Institute in a couple of weeks?
We went last year, we're going this year. And, you know, I also think about that in terms of the galley room. I don't want to take those because we get them in the store, you know, and there's like, we automatically get a lot of advanced reader copies that, you know, there's a lot of small stores around the country that hardly get any. It's like when I go to Winter Institute, I'm like, I'm super selective because, oh, that should be for the people that don't get that,
need them,
that automatically, you know, so.
When you were talking about the sales reps, I couldn't help but think how sad it is that the indie bookshop owners living in smaller communities are missing out on their visits. That's really sad.
Yeah, well, they probably don't know what they're missing in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, what do you both enjoy most about being independent bookshop owners?
I really enjoy, well, other than working with these amazing people, our staff is so great and they're so smart and just well-read. I really enjoy the events. Last year we put on almost 100 events, author events in store, meeting the authors, bringing the community together. It's really fun. And a lot of times, almost every time, we have people commenting, oh, this is the first time I've been here. And things like that, like, oh, I really like this space. Mm-hmm. And that's really fun. We also do the school assemblies, have authors visit schools in the local area. And that's, our team sets that up and we do pre-order campaigns. And it's really neat to see books getting in the hands of kids. And sometimes the parents of one school will buy books for the Title I school down the street, you know, that kind of thing. It's just really community building. So I would say, like, just the experience of being in the store and the engagement of the community. What do you say?
In addition to that,
okay,
on a sort of really straightforward level, it's great not having anyone to report to, and, you know, just being in charge of our own destiny. You know, of course, it's a little nerve-wracking. You know, we knew we were buying a successful business, and hopefully everything goes well and it'll stay that way as long as we need it to. Being able to, you know, every once in a while, just sort of take a deep breath and step back and look around and go like, wow, this is all ours. And it's a place that, you know, again, I said this earlier, that people just enjoy so much. Mm-hmm. And it's super fun to have those customers comment on how much they're enjoying the store. Mm-hmm. And then the kids, you know, early on, starting working in the store and having the parents with the little kids, and realizing, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to see that kid grow up here probably. Mm-hmm. And now seeing that, like, a couple, you know, there's a few of them that are in the store all the time, and they're, you know, like 2.5 years older than they were when I first started to meet them. And the cutest thing is when you're working behind the counter and it's a tall counter. And the first thing you see is the little hand, like, slap the book onto the counter. You don't see the child because they're shorter than the counter. And just the book appears up there. And then the parent comes behind and it's like, it's just adorable, really, you know, knowing that, like, wow, these kids are going to be readers for life. because of the space that we're providing open to them, and that's all we're doing.
Yeah.
So I think that just the joy I get from seeing other people's joy in the store is the biggest.
That you can't get from the efficient way of buying a book, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Okay, let's talk about books. What are you both currently reading?
I'm reading, granted, we read a lot of advanced copies, so they're probably not even out yet, but like Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange. This comes out in March. Tommy Orange is the author that wrote There, that was just blew out, and I really like his writing, so I'm reading that now. At the same time, I'm trying to insert backlist books into, you know, we read for events and we read for, you know, upcoming books. But I'm trying to insert backlist, and the success of Tom Lake for Ann Patchett got me thinking about her, and I had never read Ann Patchett. So I'm reading right now Bel Canto. So I just started that. But yeah, those are the two I'm into right now.
Lyric Opera of Chicago, I think it was in 2016, 2017, something like that. They turned Bel Canto into an opera. I'm sure it's fantastic.
That's cool.
Okay, Eric, what are you reading?
I'm actually between books. I just finished The Morningside from Taya Albrecht, and that comes out in March. Very good. I really enjoyed that. And I think I'm going to start Last Acts, which just came out this week. And this seems like rollicking,
interesting one.
It's fiction. It's about like a father-son gun store owning father and son forced to live together after a near-death experience. I don't know. Sounds like one of those that like gets a little crazy.
Yeah. I just finished reading Danielle Trussoni's The Puzzle Maker.
Sold a lot of those. Did you like it?
Yes, I did. I love a good thriller, and you definitely hit the spot. It was great. Jessica and Eric, thank you so much for being guests on the Bookshop Podcast. I know your days are extremely busy, and I appreciate you taking the time to have a chat.
Mandy, thank you so much for all you do. This was really fun to be on your show, and I listen to you all the time, and it's a great show. I love when you interview authors, and then just supporting independent bookstores is just amazing.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. It was a lot of fun. A little nerve-wracking. I did okay.
You did better than okay. You were fabulous. And you both have such a great story.
I would love for people to do this for themselves. Like, realize you can live with intention. You know, you really can.
Ah, you see? That will make a great bumper sticker.
There you go.
You've been listening to my conversation with Jessica and Eric Green, owners of Mrs. Dalloway's in the Elmwood District of Berkeley, California. To find out more about the Bookshop Podcast, go to thebookshoppodcast.com and make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to the show. You can also follow me at Mandy Jackson Beverly on X, Instagram, and Facebook, and on YouTube at the Bookshop Podcast. If you have a favorite indie bookshop that you'd like to suggest we have on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you via the contact form at thebookshoppodcast.com. The Bookshop Podcast is written and produced by me, Mandy Jackson Beverly. Theme music provided by Brian Beverly, executive assistant to Mandy, Adrian Otterhan, and graphic design by Francis Farala. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.